How many people were here last Sunday and remember me saying that last Sunday was the last parable we were going to look at? Oh, boy, were we wrong. We were so wrong. All right. We're going to look at one we did not cover, but probably one of the most common ones. But this one is not called a parable in the New Testament. So some people consider it a parable. Some people don't consider it a parable. So when we look at it, we'll see why some people consider it one and some people don't consider it one. And that's found in Luke 16. So let's open our Bibles to Luke 16 now. Beginning in verse 19, it's one of them that is certainly talked about and preached on and so forth as much as any, but again, it's not always listed under the title of parables. It's the rich man and Lazarus. If we go back, I don't know how long ago it was we started parables, but when we go back, we talked about why Jesus taught in parables and some of the characteristics of parables. Rarely in parables are there people named. It's rare. That's one of the reasons why this is not considered a parable, is because there's actual names in it. For instance, Abraham and Lazarus. So that's why a lot of people don't consider this a parable. But either way, there are some great, great lessons to learn from it. Let's see. Would someone read verses 19 through 21? Just to get us started. 19 through 21 of Luke 16.
Now there was a certain rich man in the heap, habitually dressed in purple and fine linen, gaily living in splendor every day. A certain poor man named Lazarus was laid at the gate, covered with sores, and longing to be fed with the crumbs that had fallen from the rich man's table. Besides, even the dogs were coming and licking his sores.
Okay, there's the context, the background for the lesson that's to follow. Notice the details and the particulars. Again, that's another reason why it's often not called a parable, is because of how detailed this is. These two specific people. Notice there was a certain rich man. Not just there was a rich man, but there was a certain rich man. And then there was this particular beggar, this particular poor person. So again, those are some of the reasons. And these two couldn't be any different, could they? You're talking about the absolute extremes of the so-called economic scale. I mean, one very, very well off, and one that had absolutely nothing. One had everything in the world he needed and more. The other looked for crumbs every day. That's how bad off it was. And of course, there was no welfare state back in that first century. You know, beggars stayed beggars. And they didn't get any help from any sort of group from the government or anything. So this guy, Lazarus, was full of sores. Again, there was no sort of health care that people like that could get. And all he was he was desiring to be fed with crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. And to make it even worse, dogs would come and lick his sores. You know, there weren't really domesticated dogs like we have nowadays. They were almost wild back then that ran in the streets. So he couldn't be really in much worse shape. Whereas the rich man couldn't be in any better shape. Yes.
Yeah. He wasn't nimble, he at least couldn't travel on his own.
Yeah. Yeah. He was in about as bad a shape as possible. Yes.
Well, according to the law of Moses, too, any person that saw him, because they weren't committed to go to the temple and tithe like we are. So any person that saw him, if they were under a thing to give him a tenth of what they had. So the begging then was sort of a profession, kind of, sort of. people didn't enter it by choice, but, you know, they could possibly survive. So that's the reason that in the temple there were always the people that wanted to be healed. And
waiting to be healed,
right, because they'd sit by that door where the people with the money would go in, because if you're going to beg for money, it's better to beg for people that have got it.
Yeah, so, that makes sense, definitely.
And, so that's the reason he was at the rich man's door. He's hoping that the rich man would give him, take pity on him and give him some money.
And he had, and basically was getting nothing, was he? So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. So there's the, you know, there's the way of all flesh, right? We all are headed to that same destiny, that same end. Rich or poor or everything in between, we are headed for that destiny to leave this world. And there's no preference. Death doesn't have a preference for rich or poor. Doesn't make any difference. So notice that the angels carried him to Abraham's bosom. We're going to talk about angels tonight in the second part of our series of lessons, and we're going to talk about that particular aspect of angels' work. So I'm not going to spend much time on it tonight. So that's what happened to the beggar. He was carried to Abraham's bosom. Whereas the rich man died and was buried, and being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Now there was the outcome, the fate, if you will, of the rich man. Obviously the rich man had not done what in his earthly life? What had he not done to end up where he was?
He sure didn't help the poor.
Okay.
He hadn't prepared for the next life.
Probably never even thought about the next life, did he? He had everything he wanted in this life. I mean, he had everything he needed. All it said, you know, I think the King James talks about how he fared sumptuously. He had way more than anybody needed to have. And again, Lazarus had essentially nothing. Lazarus had in some way, even though he didn't have much in this world, he had prepared himself for the next. So these two, one had prepared for what was going to happen after he left this world. The other one had not thought about it at all. Who does this rich man remind you of, another person in the New Testament we hear about?
Rich young ruler.
Rich young ruler? All right.
The man who was going to tear down his barns.
Okay, guy that was only thinking about this life, wasn't he? Similar person here. He was rich, had all kinds of material wealth and resources. He was prosperous. And all he was thinking about was this life. That was it. There was no preparing for the next at all. You know, some of the other parables talk about preparing. Anybody remember one parable in particular that talks about the need to prepare for the end? Okay, yes. The virgins, right? Some prepared, half of them prepared, half of them did not. And so when the time came, some of them missed out, didn't they? So these two men here, Lazarus and the beggar, one had prepared for the next life and one had not even thought about it, had not done anything. He thought this life was it. You know, live it up, eat, drink, and be merry. That whole philosophy, which certainly is believed by a large number of people in our society. So what happens? Well, the rich man finds himself, he's tormented. He is in such agony that he's tormented. And he says he lifts up his eyes and sees Abraham, but Abraham was not close. Abraham was a long way off. The idea of separation, right? Abraham and Lazarus was in a wonderful state, wonderful place of paradise, but not so the rich man. He saw them and he was in agony. There was a separation and he was in agony because of it. He was tormented because of it. So he cried and said, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me. and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. Well, we learn a little more about why he was tormented, right? He describes it as being, he's tormented because he's in this flame. And think about all the places in the New Testament that describe eternal torment as a place where there's flame, where there's fire. Anybody remember any of those? How's the Bible describe? Of course, that's the final resting place that's described as a lake of what? Lake of fire, right? Toward the very end of Book of Revelation in chapter 20. Says it's a lake of fire, but that's not the only place. Jesus talked about that final place being a place of fire and brimstone. So a lot of those descriptions of the final resting place. Now, of course, this is talking about in Hades, that world of departed spirits that is the, a place in between, because this is what happened to them. Not talking about heaven and hell, but more about that later. Lou Ann wants us to have a Wednesday night class on that, and we're going to be doing that soon too. But anyway, he said he just wanted Lazarus to put the tip of his finger in water. You know, that's not much. Just to put the tip of your finger in water, that would help him. That's how bad it was for him. That's how much tormented he was. So Abraham said, "Son," now remember he had called him Father Abraham in the prior verse. So Abraham returns and said, "Son, remember." This is one of the agonies, right? Remember how well you had it in this world, in this earth. Remember that in your lifetime you received your good things. That's the only good things he was going to get, was those things he had while he was on earth. That was it for him. He wasn't going to get any more. And likewise, Lazarus, evil things. But now he's comforted and you're tormented. As was brought up a while ago by Skip, this guy was brought to the rich man's house, or certainly these two knew each other, didn't they? No doubt about it. But the rich man had never done anything for him. The rich man could have provided all kinds of things for Lazarus, food and clothing and a place to be and all kinds of things, but he had ignored him. So he had opportunity after opportunity to help and chose not to. Remember when Jesus is talking about, I think it's in Matthew 25, where he talks about those two groups of people. And one of the groups of people, the ones that he says are going to be in everlasting pain and torment, everlasting hell, are those people who did not do what? Visit people in prison, clothe people who needed clothing, give food to people who were hungry, help people who were sick. He had a whole list of things, right? And he said, because you didn't do them to them, you weren't doing them to me. So Jesus in Matthew 25 says, when you do good works for people, whether it's giving them food or, you know, any of those things, he says, you're doing them to me. Or when you don't do them to people, then that's like not doing them to me. So there's another instance where Jesus teaches the necessity of good works. We're not put on earth to just do stuff for ourselves. That's not what life's about. Life's about serving others and helping others and being there for others and doing good for others. It's not about ourselves. So he says, because all you were concerned about was getting your good things, he says, all the good things you had in that world, that's it. You're not getting anything else. You're going to be in torment forever. You're going to be separated from God forever, separated from good things forever. And besides all this, he adds to it, besides all this, between us and you. Remember, he saw Abraham afar off. He said, between us and you, there is a great gulf and it's fixed. When someone dies, their destiny is fixed. You know, there's no purgatory, there's no praying for the dead, there's none of this. When someone dies, their destiny is fixed, and it's fixed forever, and there's no changing it. So Abraham says, know that that's fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. There is no passing. There's no changing. Fixed is fixed. Your destiny is fixed forever, eternally. There's no way to change it. Well, after hearing that there's no way Lazarus could go dip the tip of his finger and bring water, after hearing that, he says this, well, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house. Why? Because I have five brothers, they were obviously still alive, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. There was at least one good thing about the guy. Once he realized that nobody could do anything for him, I mean, it was over for him. Nothing good ever. He was going to be in torment and pain forever. He says, well, please do something about my five brothers. They're still alive. Please go tell them not to come to this place. Tell them what it's like. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's what my conception of hell is, that, you know, if I go to heaven and my best friend didn't become a Christian, I'm not going to know that in heaven. Because there's not going to be sorrow or any regret or any heaven. But if I'm in hell, I can see everybody in heaven that I knew,
yep.
And I'm not there. And I just add to
that's right.
Moment.
All the joy and happiness that you're not getting to partake of. Yeah.
And so that everybody can relate to what fire
they
does.
Sure can.
And so, you know, that's yep. A pretty universal thing. And and if you're constantly burning, you know, if I burn my finger and then get it out of fire, eventually it quits hurting.
Yeah.
But this, you don't ever get it out of fire. It's just
that's right.
Continuous pain.
It's continuous. Never ending. That's so true. And so this guy wants to make sure his five brothers don't join him. This is basically what he wants. So have send Lazarus that he may testify to my brothers so that he can tell them about how this place is and how to avoid it. But Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. They have opportunities, don't they? That's what he's saying. They have opportunities. They have all the information, all the knowledge they need right now to avoid coming here. Of course, the implication was I did too, and I didn't pay attention to it. I had Moses. I had the prophets. I paid no attention to them. So he says, if someone will just go back. Well, Abraham says, no one needs to go back. They've got everything they need. Everything they need. So he says, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. They will repent. But he said to him, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded though one rise from the dead. Yes, go right ahead.
Chronologically, had Jesus already raised Lazarus from the dead by this time?
You mean back when he raised
the brother?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't.
I don't think it's the same Lazarus, no.
Yeah.
But I thought he might have been pointing back to the Lazarus. If Lazarus had already been raised from the dead, if people didn't believe, then
yeah.
It might be a.
That's a good point, and I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know. No, question. No, that's a good point, yes.
Well, there's a difference between having your life restored and raised from the dead. That's what happened to Lazarus. Christ restored his life to him. But when Christ arose, He he's opposed yeah. to the death. He didn't have his life restored to him. He was a different creature. And that's when, in the time when the dead shall rise, so they're not going to, his physical body's yeah. not going to be going before the day of judgment.
It's going to be a resurrected body. That's true. So, I think there's a strong lesson here, and I know our time is starting to run out. There's a strong lesson here about how this is what we're responsible for. It says this is what we're responsible for. This is all we need. Which means we don't need any latter-day revelations, do we? This is it. Oh, I'm sorry, it. Yep. That's right. And so this is all that's necessary for people, as in that case, to repent. It's all that's necessary. People do not need anything else. They don't need angels appearing to them. They don't need this. Because he says here, it wouldn't make any difference if someone rose from the dead. If they're not going to listen to this, they're not going to repent, even if they see someone rise from the dead. Yes.
Yep. Dead, yep.
Oh yeah, just think about that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Think about how many people did not believe. Jesus rose from the dead. Most people, it didn't affect at all. Vast majority of people. And we think, oh, people today, if they saw somebody rise from the dead, no, they wouldn't. They wouldn't at all. We have, oh yes. Yeah.
After he rose from the dead.
That's right. Yeah.
Today, we've got the testimony of people who died teaching that he rose mm-hmm. from the dead.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's 1 Corinthians 15, you know, that great chapter about the resurrection. It starts about talking about all the people that had witnessed these things. And yet, most people, just like in the world, most people will believe just about anything other than this. I could write the most bizarre so-called religious text with the most bizarre stuff in it. There'd be tons of people that would believe it.
Have you read the Book of Mormon?
Oh, yeah, I've read a lot of it. And think about how many so-called intelligent people believe that. I'm amazed at that all the time. Of course, I interact with Mormons daily. So I'm amazed, absolutely amazed at what people believe other than the truth. Most people will not believe the truth.
That's right.
They'll go out of their way to believe something that is totally bizarre, with no foundation, with nothing. No proof or anything. They'll believe something totally bizarre besides instead of obeying the truth. And that, I think, is his point there at the end. I really do. He says, if they're not going to believe Moses and the prophets, it won't do any good for anything else. Well, thank you for all your comments today. I sure appreciate it.